Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the WTF1 podcast, the Monaco Grand Prix Race Review Edition. Now, I had to do that intro because Matt isn't here. I hope I did it service. But yeah, Matt's away on holidays, but I am joined by Mr. Monaco, Tom Bellingham. Tommy, how are you doing after that chaotic Monaco Grand Prix?
It's quite the nickname, Mr. Monaco, isn't it? Wasn't that Graham Hill's
nickname? Graham Hill, yeah.
I mean, I'll take it. It's unfortunately, I haven't won the Monaco Grand Prix multiple times, but I do enjoy the Monaco Grand Prix. I did like your intro very much, because to be fair, if Matt had been doing the intro, it'd be a lot more somber, I imagine.
That's true. Yes, lots of people probably going to think that maybe Matt's given this one a skip because he's just so heartbroken over the clerk curse continuing. But no, he is getting a tan on holiday, so we'll let him off. Now, before we get into our thoughts on the race and everybody's 3-word race reviews, just a quick shout out to say that this podcast is once again sponsored by Elgato, our season-long partners, and making us sound almost like professionals with all this fantastic equipment. Let's dive in to the 3-word race reviews. We have got Kenji.mk saying Ferrari master plan. Sense a little bit of sarcasm.
Sarcasm, yeah.
We've got Cy Pranath saying redemption for Checo. Paul.1103 Ferrari strategy circus. And Diano Universo, Monaco needs rain. You've picked some really great ones.
You did very well there. Well done.
Thank you.
Said you were going to butch them. You nailed all 4.
Well, thanks.
I'll
just wait for the people to message me back and be like, that's not how you pronounce it. But yeah. Okay, well, they're the 3-word race reviews from fans. Tommy, what are your first thoughts on that race?
First thoughts?
Yeah, spicing it up.
It was good, especially for Monaco.
It was good.
That's not my 3-word race review. Monaco, I think that's about as good of a race as you're going to get at Monaco these days. We all know that perhaps not particularly well suited to modern Formula One cars, however much I like it and think it is just a one-off novelty kind of race for the calendar, that I wouldn't want them all to be like that, but it's a little bit different. And the fact that, you know, the rain shower, we'll go into this, but a little bit frustrating at the start, made you wonder, oh, why does it always rain too much? And then, yeah, a fair bit of passing and, you know, lots of strategy, chaos, drama. Even the end, not everyone will agree on this, but I thought it was super tense. Just the fact that, you know, where do you ever see 4 leading cars nose to tail? Were it like, even though it's hard to pass, like Sainz could have gone for that dive bomb any moment. And yeah, it's a really cool race. And actually, I was up in Leeds with a couple of my mates from
Leeds.
And I was watching with a couple of uni mates who don't watch Formula One. And one of my uni mates' daughter was watching it as well, about 5 years old. And she was hooked. She was absolutely loving it. Never watched Formula One race before. She could not take her eyes off it. She was like reacting to everything. So I think I've converted a new Formula One fan in the process as well. Good times.
Has she joined Team WTF1?
No, that's the next stage.
Next step. Okay, I see. Do it in gentle steps. There we go.
Yeah.
We'll make it work. Right, so talking of that race and Sergio Perez taking victory. Let's go for my three-word race review first, which is Checo Championship Contender. Now, for this three-word race review, I've literally just written these notes. Checo wins in Monaco. Happy Katie, woo woo. So that's kind of my my summary of it all.
Thank you, everybody. Yeah. Goodbye.
Exactly. So Sergio Perez took his third F1 career victory. And unfortunately for Charles Leclerc, it kind of came about as the fact of Ferrari messing up the strategy, which we'll go into later on the podcast. But yeah, I'm just absolutely elated for my boy Sergio. Said in the little chat with Christian Horner beforehand, a few fans picked up on social media that it sounded like he said, perhaps I signed too early, which is most likely in reference to a contract. Obviously, at the moment, he hasn't got a deal for next year. But surely with the performance that we've seen so far this season and now securing that win in Monaco, his stake has got to be pretty high and his shares pretty high in Red Bull.
Yeah. <don't> No, it's very surprising, you know, with the greatest respect to Checo Perez. I didn't see it coming. I don't think even the biggest Sergio Perez fans or, you know, people that back Perez to the hills could maybe see this coming, because last year, the fact that not him winning Monaco, just the fact that he is genuinely in this title fight now, and he's having a fantastic year. I mean, his story, by the way, at the end of 2020, looking like he'd have no drive and he'd be out of Formula One, and then you had that win, didn't you, in Sakhir? Unbelievable, one of the best wins in F1. You know, the fact that he came from like last to win it, and that race seemed like it was. He was really emotional on the podium, and it almost felt like it was at least I've retired with a win. I've got a win now. You know, I'm happy. And his career arc is just like, it's still going, you know, not many people like hit their peak. What would it have been? 10, nine years. So like 10th season, is it, in F1? And who'd have thought at the end of 2020 we'd be sat here saying that, one, he's a Monaco race winner, and two, he is genuinely in this title. I don't think anyone saw that coming. It's brilliant.
I love it. You know, you did a tweet yesterday because away from Monaco, Marcus Ericsson also won the Indy 500, which is amazing. And yeah, when you think back to 2018 or wherever it may be, and thinking, well, Sergio Perez is actually going to go to Red Bull and he's going to win the Monaco Grand Prix and he's actually going to potentially be in a championship title fight, and Marcus Ericsson's going to go over to IndyCar and he's going to win the Indy 500, you'd be like, what, like, multiverse are you talking about here? Like, this is absolutely mental. So yeah, just thrilled for Checo. We got to see an awesome dive into the swimming pool, which is something we were kind of robbed of when Verstappen won last year because they didn't have the floater home. But yeah, oh, I'm just so happy. And now I can kind of say that like all my faves have kind of won in Monaco, with Rosberg and then Ricciardo and now Perez. All I need is that Ocon victory in Monaco, but we might be a bit far off of that, so I won't get too greedy.
Yeah,
let's go to some questions. First one being from our lovely Team WTF1 member Mags, who said, if Red Bull hadn't pulled team orders in Spain, Checo would only be 1 point behind Max. Standings would be Verstappen 118 points, Perez 117 points, and Leclerc 116 points. Whilst it's very early, and then said in brackets, and they might already consider themselves committed to Max, do you think Red Bull would consider switching team leaders, or at least letting them race each other directly more often? That has been one of the questions that we've seen a lot when you asked for questions yesterday, talking about whether Checo is in that championship fight now. Obviously, I made that my three-word race review. But do you think that perhaps Red Bull are maybe going to try and have to share eggs into both baskets now, rather than just kind of putting them all in Team Max and Checo kind of being that really reliable wingman? Because he's showing some pretty fast pace and great potential so far this year.
He is. I mean, I'm still adamant that whether Perez could have held off Max if they'd let them race. Obviously, Max on a much better tyres in that race. And you think if his DRS was working, he probably could have got by anyway. But it is still fascinating that even just last week, we all kind of said we can see why they did the team orders present in this title, really. You think that, you know, they're going to have to maximize Max because of the problems that he's had. And to be fair, you know, Max has had an extra DNF, of course, in Melbourne. Obviously, they've both retired from Bahrain. So you kind of even there. But then if you factor in, you know, more luck, you could say that Prez was extremely unlucky in Saudi Arabia not to win. He got shafted by the safety car and he put it on pole. And he is, you know, if luck had gone his way, he could genuinely be leading this world title. And that is absolutely unbelievable. Can't be said enough how like surprising it is, really, because last year, Verstappen, it felt like that second seat is just a seat that you just never beat Verstappen, right? Everyone in that seat has never got anywhere near him.
Chalice.
Yeah. But even when Sergio was doing well, it was always like second behind Max or whatever and picking up podiums and things. But yeah, I think for them to switch, I think they keep him in it, but I think in order for them to switch team leaders, I think Verstappen would have to be a long way out of the title for them to go, right, you're number one now, Checo. I think that would be quite a stretch. It'd have to be, you know, Verstappen's had like six DNFs in a row and is not any chance of winning the title. But it does create a very interesting situation at Red Bull now.
It does. And yeah, like you say, I think it's going to take a few more DNFs for them to fully go Team Checo. Obviously, Max is the reigning world champion. He will probably get priority because of that. And for the longest time, as you say, with that second Red Bull seat, we have seen drivers in there that have maybe just been a bit too young and naive in that seat and haven't been able to really do what Checo is doing. But Christian Horner, you know, he is a team boss with a lot of experience. He's dealt with like the multi-21 days when they had Seb and they had Webber. And that was a case of two extremely competitive drivers, maybe one that was described as the golden boy, and how he maybe handled Webber in hindsight might not have been the best way, but you know, Formula One is a championship. It's a sport at the end of the day. And it can't all be rainbows and fluffy clouds and unicorns, can it? Sometimes it has got to be brutal when those decisions have got to be made. But yeah, for the moment, I'm just so elated and happy to see Checo out there living his best life.
Amazing. I mean, we've got Baku next as well. And
I know.
We all know what happens in Baku. Well, Checo won it last year, but also the fact that Red Bull's battling together in Baku, you know how that ends. So you never know. We'll see. It's going to be very fascinating to see how that turns out.
I'm really looking forward to it. I really love Baku. It's one of my favorite tracks on the calendar, but I don't think that's a particularly unpopular opinion. It normally produces pretty wacky racing. Now, next question is from EdekGB, who says, with Checo being so close, will Red Bull give him a genuine shot at the title? At least for now, it seems reckless to put all your effort into getting Max a title when Checo has been fantastic so far this season. I promise this isn't my burner account. but yeah, pretty much similar to the last one. You know, we've seen that Sergio has taken a massive step forward this year. And perhaps with the more competitive machinery, like, and Sergio actually performing in the car, then the narrative could change, I guess. But for now, I can't see it, them just going, yep, Sergio, you're our man, you won Monaco, you did a cool dive in the pool, championship is yours, honey. Max, get in, you can be clean in the box now, we don't need you. Like, that's not going to happen, is it?
No. And Monaco is an anomaly at the end of the day. That's not, yeah, this is not to take anything away from Sergio Perez. He has been absolutely fantastic this weekend. And for anyone, we said it earlier, no one has beaten Max Verstappen in that. Like he just completely, like, Verstappen was nowhere near him all weekend.
No.
Even all the practice sessions, Verstappen could not could not challenge him. And that is credit to Perez for a brilliant drive. But Monaco is such a unique race. I think we need to see when we're on more normal circuits, in inverted commas, if Sergio is beating Max then, or at least, you know, like taking points off him and things like that, that is when, yeah, that's when we can start discussing this. Because one thing that's very interesting is the fact that if you look at 2007 is a great example. Ferrari snuck that title because essentially they only had to worry about Kimi Raikkonen, and the two McLarens were fighting each other and taking points off each other. And then Kimi swooped in at the end and took the title by a point. If Perez and Verstappen are fighting each other, that could help Leclerc here in the title race, because that inter-team battle, you could argue that it's not necessarily that Sainz is out of it yet. Definitely not. But if they have that luxury of Leclerc being in the title race on his own, and Red Bull have to start getting a little bit, you know, because I think Sergio Perez, he's been happy to play like second fiddle because he hasn't been on the pace. But now he's got that sniff of that championship. We saw what it was like with Ocon and Jenson Button as his teammate. I know he's matured a lot since then, but I don't think he's going to lie down and just accept the fact that a title could be his. And I can't believe we're saying this, because I think going into the season, I said this in one of the podcasts, that Max's biggest benefit, this is before we knew the pecking order, I thought the biggest benefit for Max in the championship fight would be the fact that Carlos and Leclerc would take points off each other, and the two Mercedes would take points off each other. And Max, you know, he always gets the best out of the car, and he's always going to pick up the best results. And if anything, it's been the other way around.
Crazy, isn't it? Well, from that, let's talk about the Ferraris, because... We've made up a three-word race review for Matt. We guessed it, which was more Leclerc heartbreak. So, Matt, if you're listening, sorry if that's not what you would have gone with, but, you know, we thought you might be a little bit predictable, so we went for that one. But tell me, what did you go for your three-word race review for Monaco?
I went for Ferrari strategy fail. And boy, FSF. Did they fail.
Yes, FSF. They did.
Sounds like it, yeah. Ferrari have an amazing car, and I imagine this is the thing that the Tifosi were most worried about, is that strategy could cost them when they have those races. We saw a very brief moment of it in Imola, where they pitted, in my opinion, quite odd to pit Leclerc quite early to go for fastest lap, and not settling for the points. But that was very small in comparison to this. And the fact that Monaco is all about strategy, Leclerc had that race won. He had such a healthy lead. He even had Sainz as a rear gunner behind him. That was Ferrari's race to win, you know, at least winning with Leclerc, even if they couldn't get Sainz to hold off the other Red Bulls. And this is the thing that Ferrari want to win the title, they need to get right. And it's such a huge error from Ferrari that they either had to commit to dries and keep Leclerc out and put dries on when it dried up, or if they were going to do the Inters thing, they had to react to Perez immediately.
Yeah.
And they dawdled about and they didn't react quick enough. And then essentially they ended up doing neither of the things that they needed to do. And that just meant, they lost the race. And it was heartbreaking, really. That's the first time I've seen Leclerc truly angry at Ferrari. Normally, he's the one beating up himself, isn't he, after races when he's made a mistake. But that's the first time I've seen Leclerc really, really furious with Ferrari. And who can blame him?
Exactly. Like you say, I think that was pretty much a guaranteed Leclerc victory, which, as much as, you know, I'm here happy for Checo and it's a lovely news story, there's a part of me that is just so heartbroken for Charles Leclerc. Sorry, my dog keeps tippy-tapping around, if you can hear background noise. Oscar, sit down. Yeah, it was ridiculous what Ferrari were doing. I mean, with Ferrari and their strategy, like I was thinking about this earlier, they're the only team which have like a collection of memes and reaction pics around their strategy calls, like for people ready to share them, whether that's like clown faces of people on the pit wall, or whether I've got one on my phone that's like strategy or something like that and something pointing down, like yeah. There is a meme pack, if you like, for when Ferrari bulls up their strategy, and that's the only team on the grid that I can think of that have such a thing. So, you know, it's not a one-off or it's happened twice, like it seems to
people
be
can see it coming
theme.
Can't they?
Yeah, and it's tragic because like you say, F1 fans have been waiting what feels like a lifetime. Guarantee it's only been a few years, but it's felt like a long time for Ferrari to finally get their act together and produce a good car that can rival what we thought might be Mercedes, but actually turns out to be Red Bull at the top. And then they go and flush things like this down the toilet. It's infuriating. At the moment, plenty of my mates are working on their own side hustles. Importantly, lots of them need an e-commerce platform to start, run, and grow their businesses, so I recommend them Shopify. Shopify makes it simple for anyone to sell anywhere, from creating your online shop in your look, to finding new customers, or to scaling that burning idea. With Shopify, you can do it all from one place with no need for skills in design or coding. I have actually previously set up an entire new website for an online business using Shopify and was amazed at how simple and easy it was to use, with help on hand whenever I needed it and so many options available for customization. Running a successful business means getting the insights you need to grow, and that's so important, which is why with Shopify's single dashboard, you'll also be able to manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere in the world. It's no wonder every minute of every day a new seller makes their first sale with Shopify, and you can join them. Sign up for a free 14-day trial at shopify.co.uk/WTF1. So go to shopify.co.uk/WTF1 right now to grow your business today. You won't regret it. It's the perfect e-commerce platform to use. That's shopify.co.uk/WTF1.
Yeah, it's the fact that we've got Jack in the Team WTF1 chat saying it's the fact that, you know, they made two wrong calls for Leclerc, not even one. Once they'd kind of... got him to stay out. They said stay out. It was too late. They just looked completely clueless with strategy. And it cost Leclerc big time. And I agree with you. I was buzzing for Checo. It's really nice to see a different winner. I said I wanted a different winner, hence why Grace didn't wear the onesie this weekend.
Oh, so. No, really?
No, she didn't. I said she wouldn't. And there you go. Max didn't win. So baby. It's proof. But yeah. The fact that Leclerc had that in the bag, and the curse was the fact that he'd never finished Monaco. And he finally finished Monaco. You know, he didn't even get on the podium, and he was the fastest driver without doubt all weekend. He was the fastest driver and didn't even get a podium. It's just shocking, really, really shocking. And yeah, Ferrari, it's all on Ferrari. They threw it away.
They did, yeah. Charles saying after the race, the win was clearly in our hands. We had the performance. We had everything. And yeah, absolutely heartbreaking. I thought, to be honest, when they called him in and then said, stay out, stay out. And, you know, it kind of seemed like a mix between when they were speaking to Lewis, be like, in, out, out, that kind of vibe. And also I was getting flashbacks to 2016 when I saw the stay out thing. And then I saw him in the pit lane. I was like, he's going to be there. There's going to be no tires. This is going to be a disaster. Oh my goodness. But fortunately they had the tires there ready. It was just, they weren't expecting Carlos's in lap to be so slow, I think, and how everybody came together all at once. But yeah, unbelievable from Ferrari.
The weird thing as well is that you'd feel like, I don't know the gaps off the top of my head, but I imagine they had this in hand, that you feel like, because they wanted him to stay out, you know, once he's committed to Inters and got track position, you know, he's worst case scenario is finishing fourth anyway. So have that gamble. But, you know, them pitting him again, essentially doing that extra pit stop, it just meant that he was destined to finish fourth.
Yeah, it was shocking. In the stars. But yeah, it pretty bad. And yeah, I we'll probably talk about it a little bit later, but with the red flag which Schumacher caused, people were asking Charles if during that red flag period, obviously he had to go and sit in and be near the garage. He was like, did you speak to the team? And he was like, nope, I didn't even want to like look at them. I didn't want to talk to them because it would just anger me too much. I just needed time to sort of reset, all this kind of thing. So yeah, I would love to be a fly on the wall in those post-race debriefs and chats, but at least he finished the race, eh? Every cloud.
That is going to be another fascinating thing, how the season goes, because it's been all lovey-dovey with Leclerc and Ferrari so far, that he is their golden boy. He talks about, you know, how much he loves Ferrari. It's been written, like you say, written in the stars that he's been with Ferrari and gone through the ranks, and he's been with Ferrari for ages. And he signed a massive contract with Ferrari as well for ages. And, you know, if he loses this title because of bad strategy calls, I wonder how much we've seen it before. You know, Fernando Alonso, they just get sick of it and just be like, I need to go. They're costing me championships. And it's a shame because, you know, however much I'm a Verstappen fan, I do love Ferrari. I love
everybody's a Ferrari fan.
Exactly, they are. And if you say you're not, you're lying, like Sebastian Vettel says, because it's great to see Ferrari back at the front. And, you know, it's a shame because I don't want them to be like a laughing stock, because they're an amazing team and there's something really special about Ferrari. It's actually funny, you know, I mentioned earlier about my friend's daughter watching the race, and he said to her, like, you know, who are you supporting? And she went, the red car. There's something about Ferrari, isn't there? Just when you're a kid, just the Ferrari has that pull. So yeah, I want them. I genuinely, you know, it might seem odd for some people as a Verstappen fan to say this,
and your Verstappen cape in the background.
Exactly. I do want Ferrari to, I don't want Ferrari to just completely ruin this title fight with botched strategies all the time. It'd be a shame.
Very much so. Well, let's dive into a question. So this is from, it could either be Time Keen or Tim E. Keen, I'm not sure. He said, over the past two seasons, it's become very clear that while Red Bull doesn't always have the best car on any given circuit, the team itself always seems to have an edge over its competition, whether it be pit stops or strategy, for example. How do Ferrari try to combat that moving forward? I mean, we've touched upon that earlier, but I mean, it is pretty crazy when you've got Carlos Sainz making strategy calls for them, saying, no, I'm not going on the inters. I'm going to stick it out and wait for the dries. And, you know, fair play to Carlos, because that call was what put him into such a good position for the rest of the race. But you shouldn't really be having, although I think it's important to have a driver, you know, give influence into decision making, because at the end of the day, they're the ones on the track. They can feel what the grip is like or whatever it might be, and when the right time to switch to a different tire compound is. But also, you know, Ferrari are there with their thousands of computers, their rain radars or whatever that go for miles, and they have all the telemetry there. They should be able to say, okay, well, while everyone around you is switching to inters, actually, we could gamble this and last three or four more laps on these if they're still okay, and then box for dries. And instead, Leclerc, which he's allowed to do, I'm not having a go at Leclerc at all, just willingly went along with their planned strategy and box for inters.
That's what a driver you think should do, really.
Yeah, and then like four laps later was having to come in for a set of dries. And you think, well, like you say, in Monaco, where it's normally a one-stop race, obviously conditions were a bit different yesterday, you shouldn't be making a pit stop within like five laps of making your last one, especially in Monaco, where it's such a huge ball like to get through the pits and everything.
The Red Bulls did do that, but they already had that advantage on the track because they didn't mess up the first stop, essentially.
Yeah.
And then obviously Carlos, like you say, he just went straight to dry. So that worked out really well. But you mentioned about Leclerc sort of doing his own strategy. I mean, that became the meme, didn't it? When Sebastian Vettel was there, that he a lot of the time it felt like when Ferrari had a good strategy, it was because Sebastian Vettel was going against the team and deciding what he wanted to do with himself. And that should not be that should not be the case for a driver. Like you say, the people on the pit wall are the one with all the information and everything. So why that's the case, and not such a not so fun fact is that the last time Ferrari, the first team to lock out the front row at Monaco and not win since Ferrari in 2008. So yeah, they really did throw that race away.
Absolutely savage. Right. Well, one big talking point after the Grand Prix, when you thought everything was said and done and we'd had the delay of the race, which we'll go into later. Don't worry, guys. I've been saving up my FIA rant for that. We had the delay to the race and then all of the drama that happened within it. We finally thought, right, Checo's a winner. Carlos in second, Max in third. Bish, bash, bosh, pack up, go to Baku. Lovely jubbly. Then Ferrari come out and say, well, actually, we think there's been a breach of the regulations and we're going to protest. And I thought, oh my goodness, protest. I hate that word. I haven't heard that word since Abu Dhabi. It sends shivers down my spine because I think it's going to be a long night, boys, right? Get me a McDonald's on order. Get my tea stocked up because this is going to be a long night. So yeah, basically Ferrari decided that both Perez and Verstappen at one point or another in the race had gone over the pit lane exit line, which you're not allowed to do. It's very naughty. And rather than putting a protest against Red Bull themselves, they protested the cars of Verstappen and Perez. And it was thrown out. It was dismissed, which we can go into. But yeah, that was a lot of drama. Tommy, as you kind of mentioned at the start of this, you were in Leeds. So you kind of were quickly rushing around to get ready for your show. And then, yeah, did you actually know that Ferrari might protest before you went into your show? Or was it like you came out and you were like, oh, everything's on fire. What's going on?
Yeah, it's funny because I thought this race would be the one where I did half a day and I had a gig in the evening. So I was like, okay, you know, Monaco's not normally the most exciting race. It'd be fine. And then the delays and delays. And I was like, oh God, I'm going to, you know, going to miss all this. And then, yeah, I didn't see any of the protest stuff, but caught up with it when I got back. And it would have been very Carlos Sainz to have got his first win, wouldn't it, by a protest?
I was making the graphics ready. I like drafted an article. And as I was writing it, I thought this would just be the most Carlos Sainz thing. I mean, he got his first podium in Brazil because Hamilton was penalized for the Albon contact. So, and we remember the videos and the pictures of him and all the McLaren gang going up on his own with his little bottle of champagne to celebrate because he didn't get to do it actually straight after the race. And then even last year in Hungary, he got promoted up to third when Vettel got disqualified from second for the fuel issue. So he has a long history of getting promoted to the podium and top results after a race. And I thought this is literally the most Carlos Sainz thing I've ever heard. But unfortunately, it didn't work out. I think it's a good thing because I really want to see Carlos Sainz get the celebrations that he deserves because he's been so close on so many occasions. But he might have actually been quite happy just to have that win and have that peace of mind and get that sort of checked off and done out of the way because everybody is mentioning it now of like, oh, his time's going to come soon enough.
And he's probably P2 thinking, again, like second year in a row at Monaco as well. Still not got that first win. So
it will come.
Yeah. There was actually a question from Xerox Fusion Z before we get into the Ferrari protest, which is about science. You kind of briefly mentioned it, but you know, the fact that like, do you think more praise should be given to science because essentially he questioned the Ferrari strategy? And yeah, fair play to science because that ended up being an amazing call for him to just, but like we said, you know, the driver shouldn't be doing that. But he did, and it made it work. And maybe it is sometimes in these conditions that the drivers can go on the instinct of how the track is themselves. They're the only ones that know what the track's like. And Carlos made an amazing call just to go straight to the slicks, save the pit stops, and then still had very good pace. And arguably, if it wasn't for a certain Nicholas Latifi, might have won the race.
God's sake, Nicholas. Unbelievable. But yeah,
maybe we'll save this for your FIA rant because there's quite a few different FIA rants. But I watched a video as well of the Williams And I think this wasn't even Latifi. This was Albon blocking Leclerc, but he did a whole lap with blue flags and no penalty, no talk of making him get out of the way. And it was only because he messed up at turn one that he actually got out of the way of Leclerc. And Latifi, we saw when he came out the pits, he stayed in front of Sainz for ages. And that was the outlap that Sainz had a chance on dries to really make an impact. And he was stuck behind Latifi. So he's going to be ruining that. But Sainz, for all the criticism we've given him for this year, we said, you know, it could just take one race to get his confidence back. And this could be the race where in difficult conditions, his teammate's the one that's had a nightmare and he's had a really good performance, even though he's probably gutted that it is another P2. But maybe this is the moment that his season turns around and it kind of saves his season a bit.
I very much hope so. I really do. He's deserving of it. So, right. Well, let's go back to the, thank you for bringing that up as well with the question from 0xFusionZ. But Katha Hyde, I'm not sure how that's pronounced, but said, how much was there actually to Ferrari's protest about Red Bull's pit exit lane infringement? Now, both of them were dismissed, as we said. And to be honest, I think a lot of it was to take the heat off Ferrari because they messed up so bad that they kind of were like, well, we're going to make it a problem now for Red Bull and potentially put their victory in third place on the line. And instead of people doing reports about Leclerc mouthing off about Ferrari in the media pen, instead everybody was writing about this potential protest. So I guess a smart call from Ferrari, because also, although they said, you know, they weren't out searching for Checo to lose his win or whatever, they wanted more clarification on the rules. It's still like, I guess, quite a handy get out of jail free card if you could just be like, well, we're protesting, goodbye, and that kind of it.
So Checo crossed the line as well, right?
No, or, this not, is a silly
sorry,
thing.
He it's, didn't cross the line, but
he didn't,
was
no.
At all.
No, not they even decided, close. They decided that he didn't breach the rules, which confused me because that was the one we all saw the replay on
Verstappen,
F1 TV
right?
direction, and it was Verstappen. And then on the FIA like updates that they provide, it said Perez was being investigated. And I was like, have they just got confused? Because we haven't seen Perez do it, but we've seen Verstappen do it, but Verstappen hadn't been put under investigation for it. So I think that was just the FIA getting their wires crossed. Yeah. talking of FIA underwear rules. I think that could potentially have been a mistake from the FIA, but I'm not certain for sure. But yeah, that one was a pretty much a throwaway. Like, they looked at the evidence and were like, okay, he did actually not do it, so that's fine. So his was thrown out. And then Verstappen's was a lot more complex because we have all seen the onboards. If you haven't, then you can go over to WTF1.com. And there's a handy little article which has got some of the images in there for you to see. But Ferrari was saying that there was a breach of the race director's event notes, as on the exit from the pits on lap 23, Verstappen's car put part of its left front and rear tyres on the tarmac onto the left side of the yellow line. But then Red Bull came back and said, well, Max's car was still to the right of the yellow line, so there was no breach of the international sporting code. And it was just one big like mess, because basically the race director, Eduardo Freitas, I think is how it's pronounced, who's in his second weekend in the job, so, you know, still fairly new to it all, although he is a very experienced FIA race director, had to sort of hold his hands up and say, well, actually, I'm not going to do an impression because I'll get into trouble. But he said that the event notes for Monaco this weekend had been cut and paste from the 2021 version and hadn't been changed to reflect the 2022 changes. How embarrassing is that?
That's something you surely don't even need to admit to people. Like, they wouldn't find out if they could cover it. I mean, yeah, slightly concerning about race directors having a mayor already. I wonder if we get to the end of the season and go, this job's hard. Maybe this job's just difficult. And again, we sit here wondering, thinking, wow, Charlie Whiting was literally the only guy that could do this job.
Because he had like 30, 40 years experience behind it. Maybe that's what people need, but then you can't just magic that out of thin air.
Yeah, it's a very weird situation that I think it was confusing for everyone at home that you could clearly see Verstappen was the one that either almost went over but didn't apparently or touched the line or whatever. And it seemed like a slam dunk. I mean, I just watched the Channel 4 highlights and, you know, they were like, that's it, 5 second penalty for Max. Mm. You know, that's no brainer. And then, like you say, it's Perez that comes up on the graphic saying that the incident's been noted. And
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Like, what?
What's he done?
Anyway, come on, let's get into it. It's rant time. There's some FIA questions now. A little jingle. K2's FIA rant.
Yeah. Right. Oh, my goodness. There are a few questions here that Tommy has put in. So let's start with at ShawneeB1983, who I love how they've started this because they've said, what's up with the at FIA? You've literally added the FIA into your WTF1 podcast question. You're calling them out. I love it. So what's up with the FIA? Delaying the start was unnecessary. Then the second restart should have been a standing start. It's almost like they were determined to manage conditions to ensure a procession. Bar the pit stops, it was pretty boring and we were robbed of those opening laps. So on that note, actually, I said to my brother, what should I do as my 3-word race review? And he said his would have been potential classic ruined. And actually, I was like, Daniel, do you want to join the podcast, mate? Because that's actually a pretty good race review. So he was furious about it. I think let's start from the start, the delayed start. Now, apparently, and this has been unofficially communicated by the FIA, but what people on the ground have heard, is that because of the rain, the rain caused a power outage, which meant that the lights at the start weren't working. Now, if that's true, I get it. It happens. It happened a few years ago at Formula E. I can't remember for the race. It was the first race of the season and they were all lined up on the grid and then the start lights didn't work. And we had like a half an hour wait where we had to get in some replacement start lights and it was all a mare. But it happens, right? Technology can sometimes be a real pain in the ass.
At WTF1, we know that all too well.
Exactly. Team WTF1 members that have just watched us set up for this will know exactly that. However, there was no communication at all. And then while everybody was flapping around, the clouds came over and there was a monumental downpour. And then we had like teams having to push their trolleys with their tires on. There were tire blankets flinging back because they weren't attached properly because it was all such a big rush. And nobody had a real clue as to what was going on. And I was listening to the Races F1 podcast this morning and Ed Straw made a really valid comment and something that I am now also wanting to get behind, where he said, I don't understand why the FIA don't have just like a designated media delegate that is in the race control room that can feed this stuff back, not only to journalists and broadcasters on the ground, because you've got Crofty and Brundle. Crofty's popping off on one because he's like slamming the FIA and saying this is ridiculous and let's go racing and all this kind of stuff. But the reality is the FIA is just tarnishing its own name when it's already an incredibly fragile place at the moment. Andrew Benson, I'm like quoting all these people here, but Andrew Benson of BBC Sport, listened to another podcast of his, he was saying that unofficially there were like lots of little talks going on within Formula One to see how they can potentially distance themselves from the FIA going forward, because there have been so many instances of things that perhaps haven't been taken as seriously as they think they should be. Maybe the Red Bull and Aston Martin situation being an example, as well as obviously everything that happened in Abu Dhabi. And like more and more fans are becoming familiar with who the FIA are, what the FIA do. And as a result, you know, are not happy maybe with the job that they're doing. Obviously they keep drivers safe and it's not just a case of you have a penalty and that's all they do. There's so much more to the FIA than just the stewarding side of things. But it shouldn't be that like a casual fan, for example, is going, well, who's this FIA then? And why have they delayed the start and all this kind of thing? The FIA should be a role that's there in the background and just does its job and nobody needs to really know they're there. But it seems to be like yesterday, everyone knew they were there and they were not doing potentially a very good job in handling it. And it comes back to communication. It's literally like what we had at the start of Spa, where everything was being delayed and there was no communication and everyone was running around like a headless chicken. When the reality is they could have just said, oh, hi guys, we've had an electrical issue because of the rain.
Yeah.
And it's going to be delayed half hour. Bish, bash, bosh. Hire me.
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, it's a great point that everyone on Twitter was just ranting, thinking that the FIA have, you know, the FIA have basically delayed the start because it's always the thing, isn't it, where F1 fans go like, what's the point of wet tyres if they can't drive in the wet? And especially later on, it didn't look like it was that wet to be that much of an issue and the start was delayed. Whereas, like you say, if there's just a bit of communication, in this day and age, communication with social media and everything, it's so easy to just inform people what's going on. And instead, rather than it just being like you say, it looks good on the FAA to just come clean and say, this is out of our control, there's been a power cut.
Yeah. And Mother Nature has stepped in ruined it.
And you'd go, fair enough, there's nothing they can do. But instead, it's just everyone on Twitter like giving them slander, saying like, this is a joke. Why aren't they starting the race? What's the point of wet tires? This isn't NASCAR, blah, blah, blah.
Also, drivers are sat there getting bloody soaked because they have no idea what's going on.
Yeah. Or holding a pizza box above their head.
Yeah, iconic behaviour, to be honest. Did you see, actually, there was one chap in that they like focused in. Everyone around them had an umbrella or a poncho and he's just sat there like completely drenched, just like regretting all of his life decisions. So I was like, oh, somebody give that guy a hug or something, or I don't know. Hot chocolate.
An umbrella.
Yeah. Hug probably won't do much if you're drenched through, but yeah, no, certainly plenty of FIA slander going on. And although there are things that the FIA also did throughout the race, which we can also go into, like for me, evident, as soon as the car was in two for Mick Schumacher, you know, fortunately he's okay and that's all good. Why was that not red flagged? It's Monaco. Although we're lucky in the sense that Monaco and the marshals there are absolutely first class. They've got the cranes and everything almost like we don't have to normally worry about tractors going onto the track, which is something that really fills me with dread every time I see it. They've got cranes and they can lift and take things through, but the barrier's demolished, the car's in two. And also with the car being in two, it's an incredibly vulnerable position. Like something like the battery could have been damaged. And the car could have still been live, or there could have been a rupture to the fuel tank, or I don't know, like I'm just coming up with random things off the top of my head here. Fortunately, none of that seemed to happen. But you think as soon as you see a car that is in two pieces on a street circuit and a barrier in...
it's far too sensible.
They're like, let's just do a virtual safety car and then we'll go to a safety car and then go to red flag. It's literally deja vu of what happened in Saudi last year, where they took so long to make a decision that then all it does is mug off people that quickly run in and grab a new set of tyres or whatever it might be. Like we saw Hamilton completely shafted by it last year, although then he was able to benefit from it in Silverstone. So, you know, it's yin and yang, I guess. But I just don't understand.
It's the most obvious call ever.
Like, flag it.
Yeah, it was the most obvious call ever. I mean, again, watching Channel 4, like the car went in and they were all like, yeah, that's a red flag. And I'm sure everyone at home, including you myself, was saying the same thing. Like, that's a red flag. Well, actually, I was very concerned for Mick at that point because it looked very nasty. From the replay, maybe wasn't as bad as it initially first looked. But when you see a car in half, it's very scary. But just such an obvious red flag. And there seemed to be a lot of screw-ups in that race.
Very much so. We've got a question here from Team WTF1 member Joran P. What do you guys think of the 2-hour time limit applied today? For me, it totally ruined the suspense of hearing how many minutes we had left with the red flag. With an average lap time of 1 minute 15 in the dry, the race would have lasted 97.5 minutes. Gosh, you're doing your stats here. Giving a 22-minute margin until the 2-hour time limit. For me, as a big event as Formula One, should have more margin than to compete. The spectacle, but maybe I'm too focused on my own wants. I don't really quite understand the
complete
last part
the
of it,
spectacle. But... Formula One should have more margin to complete the spectacle. Like they should be allowed to finish the race regardless. Yeah.
I sounded like I was having some sort of episode reading into that. I apologize. But yeah, I see why the time is there. Because it was 3 hours, wasn't it, from like the first, I guess, formation lap. And that's the sort of something that's been bought in for Spa. And that's what they broke in Spa, which annoyed me because, yeah, it should be a case of like, you start and you start the timer and you have as long as the timer is. But they use force majeure in Spa to extend it. And that's why it was just going on forever and ever and ever. Yeah, I mean, I can see why the timer is there. It gave off big Formula E vibes, to be honest with you, seeing a countdown timer of 30. Did it start like 35 minutes to go or something? 35 minutes.
I mean, biggest relief ever for me because I was ready to go out.
Yeah, you were like, well, I know it's exactly going to finish then.
Yeah, I was messaging you like, Katie, I think you're going to have to take over tweets here. I'm going to have to just tweet on the WDF1 count. Sorry, I'm off to see Alan Partridge. Bye. But yeah, the... yeah, I was relieved personally because I guess you could look at it that way. While this was a one-off for me that I had to leave after a race, that does just show that, you know, like people, like fans do have lives that they want to get on with, however much we love Formula One. If a race is meant to start at 2 o'clock and it finishes at seven, that's quite the old commitment for not just TV broadcasters but fans as well to take 5 hours out of their day. And it's like, well, would you rather just, you know, have a time there? We still did get a fair bit of racing. I personally, and people will be calling me a hypocrite now for because they're like, oh, I thought you loved Monaco, but I personally I don't feel like we were robbed in particular. Like, I didn't feel like that was a short race.
Oh my God, that's going for a lifetime.
Especially at the start, because I think I messaged you at the start when they were doing 140s at the start of the race. I was like, this race is going to last forever.
It's going to be like a 5-hour race. But yeah, no, I mean, for me as a Checo fan, it was still like full of suspense at the end because I could see the countdown clock and I was like, okay, he's got 5 minutes left. If he can just keep it out of the barriers and he can do a good job, then he's just fine. Okay, we're down to 4 minutes and a half. Like, and so it still gave that element of suspense. It was just slightly different than having laps counted down. Instead, it was just minutes. But also I think people have got to remember, one, that, you know, celebs have got to get back to their yacht parties and get that sunset pic for the gram, but also that it is a principality. It's not like it's just a circuit that's just sat there doing nothing. Like, cars need to go round, people need to get to their homes. And so it's not just as simple as like if it was at Silverstone, for example, and it's an actual permanent track that hasn't got a time limit on how long they need to be there for, which is kind of what we had in Spa. Like, restaurants need to open and all this kind of stuff. People need to be able to walk around. So yeah, I can see why they did it. But it's just it's just not nice to have the weather disrupt a race in such a crazy situation, especially in such close proximity to Spa last year. Certainly getting flashbacks, I'll tell you that much.
But yeah, it did feel like at the start, why can they never just, I wrote it on our Twitter account, like, why can F1 never just have the perfect amount of rain that just spices it up a little but doesn't affect the race too much? But I do, like, looking at it, you know, the out of Anthony nodes that just like dropped downhill slightly, and there was a camera view where it was a lake, wasn't it? Just,
yeah,
it got so flooded so quickly. But can we just have a a nice sprinkle that spices up the race without delaying it for hours and stuff these days. Come on. Come on, F1.
Maybe
please.
Bernie's sprinklers idea wasn't such a bad idea.
I feel like we actually even had a question about that, but there you go.
Oh, I love it. Right. Well, we've got another question. This one is from Mega versus Primus, who said, should I, as a Mick fan, be concerned about not only his future at Haas, but his future in Formula One? In two street circuits, a small error caused the car to split in half. I'm a big fan of Mick, but I cannot help but fear for his future. Yes. I mean, we spoke a little bit about Mick coming into this weekend. Obviously, everybody kept mentioning the whole, will he get points? Will he blah, blah, blah? And he showed great promise throughout the weekend so far. Didn't manage to bin it like he did in FP3 last year and write himself out for qualifying. So that's a little tick, little upgrade on last year. However, instead, he put the car in two during the actual race. And although, you know, we can talk about it a bit casually because we know he's fine and he's all right and that kind of stuff, like, it was still a huge shunt, and that's going to cost Haas so much money for a team that is, you know, one of, if not the smallest team on the grid, that's got very limited budget, and he can't be doing this. I mean, if this was Nikita Mazepin, you know, bring his name back from
100%. I was going to say,
like,
it myself.
It would be so different, but because Mick is this adorable, wholesome little cherub, and I just want to cuddle him and squeeze his little cheeks, you know, we can't just be letting him off with these huge shunts. Like, they're costing Haas so much money. And, you know, in a week where everybody's going on about the cost cap and how inflation's affecting that, and how, you know, for some teams, they can't even keep the wind tunnel on sometimes because the electricity bills are so high. And, like, money is becoming such a crucial factor to these teams. And yet you've got Mick causing millions of pounds worth of damage. It's not a good look for him. And, yeah, I
did it last year as well. Because all the emphasis was on Mazepin being slow and crashing,
Schumacher,
when it actually was,
it was
Mick. And then he's done it again. And you're right. However much, you know, he's a popular driver, if Mazepin had stayed in Formula One and had the season that Mick had this year of, one, being slower than his teammate, especially a teammate that's not even been in Formula One for ages, and two, smashing up the car constantly, everyone on social media would be saying, why is this guy in Formula One? He needs to go. He's out of his depth. Like, I'm sorry, I know it's savage, but, like, that, you cannot deny that that is what the narrative would be if it was Mazepin. So you have to, you know, give Mick the same treatment, and you can't just give him a free pass because his surname's Schumacher. Like, I said that he's having a terrible season after Miami when he crashed, and we said, oh, well, you know, at least he's up there in the points and he'll learn from this and won't crash again. And yes, it's a wet race at Monaco, which is a difficult circuit, but the fact is he did crash and he did write off the car again. And I mean, you wrote an article about Gunther Steiner, right? As he said, like, he's on his last warning or something.
Yeah, basically he was saying, you know, we need to have a discussion with Mick because what he's doing is not on. So let me see if I can pull up the exact quote for you. One second. So yeah, he said, with Mick, we obviously saw what happened. It's not very satisfactory having a big crash again. We need to see how we move forward from here. So, I mean, Mick said it was the mistake was that he just was 10 centimeters offline. And I'm like, okay. But as we've seen in Monaco, even 1 centimeter off the line, if you're going into swimming pool chicane and you know, nudge the tech pro, can be a huge shunt. So, I don't know. It really breaks my heart, but he needs to get it together. Otherwise he's going to be out for sure. Because, you know, there are talented drivers out there that can bring funding. You know, I know there's a big old pay drivers are rubbish and blah blah blah, but, like, there are some drivers out there. Guan Yu Zhou is a perfect example. I think he's doing a brilliant job in Alpha. He's had some real rubbish luck over the last few races, and yes, Monaco probably wasn't the finest example, but, you know, he's brought a lot of money to Alpha, and yet he's really
not crashing every weekend.
Yeah. Exactly. As blunt as it is,
and sometimes that is all you need to
get a car home when it
get a car home. And when, you know, as his confidence picks up, we saw at Yuki Tsunoda last year that he was right in the car off all the time. And while Guan Yu Zhou maybe hasn't been completely spectacular, sorry, Zhou Guan Yu, hasn't been maybe incredibly spectacular, he's been picking up some like decent solid points finishing when his car, decent finishing. And, you know, as his confidence will grow, he'll be quicker and quicker and not costing the team an absolute fortune by binning the car off. And as Mason Beck in our Team WTF One chat has just said, Zhou had the save of the century. That was epic.
Oh my goodness, that was unbelievable. That was rivaling Carlos's
save. Yeah, we've not even mentioned Carlos's save, but yeah, and Formula Wonderland said that Zhou save as well. I mean, there was some incredible moments in that race.
Yeah. I mean, I'm there like chef's kissing the save, but like shouldn't be there in the first place, but fair play to you.
What a catch.
And we saw some real saves in the F2 as well. Like really good jobs from the drivers on it. Right. I don't know why I suddenly went so like on it then, a bit like landing in it, but let's quickly skip to another question. So Harvey5D asks, when will F1 modernize the Monaco circuit? Well, Harvey, we've got some news for you. Just for you, we're going to dedicate the podcast especially to you. No, we're not. But we had lots of questions about Monaco and the role that Monaco has because it hasn't got a contract. We might have just witnessed the last Monaco GP, Tommy. How do you feel when I say that? Are you going to burst into tears?
Sad. And also, wouldn't that be Leclerc's luck that they just bid off the Grand Prix before he gets a chance to win it?
Oh, yeah.
That would just cement the curse, wouldn't it? But yeah.
It really would. But yeah, we're going to do a podcast on that potentially, I think, midweek. So if you have any questions, if you're maybe Team WTF1 and you have a burning question that you want to get into that special podcast, ping them across in the Discord and we'll try our best to feature them. So
let us know why you like, why you dislike Monaco, because we had so many questions about, is it suitable? And then some people like, oh, I liked the tension of it. And then some people saying, no, this was terrible. And it's really divided people. And we had so many questions that this podcast would be hours and hours. So we thought we'd do a special one based off it. Why not, eh?
I love it. Right. Well, on that note, shall we skip to ABCDEF1? Tommy, do you have a jingle for us this week?
I do. I'm glad I just remembered. So
yeah. Which one are we going to
go
for?
We'll go for this one. This is from...
Don't forget to hold it back a bit because sometimes it cuts out.
This is from Jonathan Craven, who's at Tenacious Wee. Hello. Please find attached for your consideration a jingle I made with my daughters for ABCDF1.
Love it.
I like how long the car was left there.
I was just cute kids of A, B, and it's like F.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
So I think that's Matt coming in at the end. You've got the cute kids, and then Matt's like, F, what?
I love it. That's awesome. Thank you so much for sending in that jingle.
Yes, thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you. And if you want to send your own jingle in, we've changed the email. Dun, dun, dun. So you can still send them to...
Sorry.
Yeah. you can still send them to contact at WTF1. But if you could send them to podcast@WTF1.com, that would be perfect. And also that email address is going to come in use for some pretty cool ideas that we've got coming up. So keep your ears to the ground for some podcast news soon. Maybe. Little tease. Right, ABCDEF1 time. Monaco GP edition. Let's start, as we always do, with Lewis Hamilton. Where is he going to go for you? What grade are you going to give him?
I think Lewis Hamilton deserves a C.
Interesting. I have gone for a B because through watching the replays, although he wasn't as strong as Russell, he sustained damage to his front wing and it hasn't really been picked up anywhere. So whether it didn't actually make much of a impact at all, because he wasn't like moaning about it afterwards in the press pen or whatever. But on watching the replays, apparently him and Ocon, obviously they had their tangle at turn one, and then apparently they had another incident the following lap, which naturally TV direction didn't pick up on.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go off the basis that he had a bit of a wounded car. Maybe it is a C, because Russell
started eighth, finished eighth. I know it's Monaco and you get stuck behind, but I guess that's part of the thing, really, getting just
I'm gonna stick
is,
with
it?
B.
Okay.
But yeah. And the fans, it was very close. Fans gave him a C, but there was literally 0.3% in it. So,
oh wow. So
from
I
between
can,
C and
so,
a B.
Okay, so we are on the right track, so it's a close call.
We had 2,722 people give him a B and 2,738 people give him a C. So it really was a few dozen of you that pushed it to a C. So
yeah,
there we go.
C for Hamilton.
C for Hamilton. This is going to make it quite easy if it's just us three.
Yeah, because there'll be a deciding vote from the fans if we need it.
I love it. Yeah, we can blame them instead. What is your rating for Russell? Tommy, what are you going to go for?
A,
I think I'm going to go for an A as well. And the fans have given majority A vote as well. Max Verstappen, he was always a little bit behind Sergio this weekend, but did still end up on the podium. What are you thinking, Mr.
I'm thinking
B. Wow. I think that's fair, to be honest, because as we said, he was always on the back foot to Checo all weekend.
Yep.
Couldn't and get benefited massively from Ferrari's mess up, so...
Yeah, I don't think you... I'm not afraid to admit it as a Verstappen fanboy with my cape in the background that he just was... like, couldn't get anywhere near Checo all weekend. And it was... it's mad, actually. That's his worst finishing result since Hungary last year when he had half a car and it's still third.
Oh my god, that's ridiculous! Yeah.
And if you discount that one where he had half a car, it would be his worst result since I want to say Turkey 2020.
Well, that's because he spun it because he was being too ambitious.
So I mean, that's what you go doing a championship when you have bad days. Still get on the podium, but I cannot give him any higher than a B personally.
That's very fair. And yeah, same as the fans. Sergio Perez, A-star, move on.
A-star, yeah. But he did Lovely crash. Thing. He did crash, but I...
Oh, it, true.
But yeah, he's been so good that he still deserves an A-star from me.
Yeah, go on it, Sergio. Why not?
Go on, Queen.
Go off. Right, what's your rating for Charles Leclerc?
A-star as well. It's not his fault.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Interestingly, fans... gave majority A. Only 1,100 of you gave him an A star, and over 3,300 of you gave him an A.
Well, what can he do? Like, what can he do?
There were some people giving him an... 39 people gave him an F. 95 people gave him a D.
People do realise that, like...
Are you feeling okay, Hans?
Like, I mean, the only thing you could argue is that he didn't overrule the strategy like Carlos did, but I mean... It shouldn't really be on him.
Yeah, but if you're told to pit and then you don't pit, then that's also more drama. He wasn't to know maybe that Carlos was going to be there.
Exactly.
I don't know.
No,
A star.
Grade
I'll
the
with.
Driver, not the
mess of a strategy.
People on the pit wall. I was going to say something else on the pit wall, but yeah.
Good save. Right, Carlos Sainz then finished in second, so close to that first win. I'll go for an A. Although I'm tempted by an A-star.
Yeah, I'm tempted by an A-star.
He was calling for the strategy.
I think that strategy call on himself tips it to an A-star for me because
yes, and he got
I do love it.
By Albon.
I do love it when a driver, however much I'm really hypocritical now, I'm being like, it's not the driver's job to do the strategy. However, but... when they do it, I like it and it pays off because, yeah. Yeah, let's give Carlos an A-star.
Spread the love, A star, and the fans gave him an A, so we're overruling you on that one as well. Rating for Norris, finished in sixth. Was it sixth? Yeah, it was because George
started fifth.
George Russell got top five.
Yeah, George Russell has to finish in the top five. It's the rules.
It is. It's in the FIA rule books. Yeah, I think A.
Yeah, I think it's an A.
Still suffering from tonsillitis, he said. He could use that excuse, oh yeah, he could win and be like, well, I still have tonsillitis. And like, we'd just all be like, yeah, go Norris. But I think pretty good.
The thing is with Lando as well is, we'll go into this with Daniel Ricciardo, but you know, if we had another driver in that car, would he, for example, Carlos Sainz, when he was at McLaren, he was brilliant. And the fact that, you know, if it was another McLaren driver who could actually compete with Lando and is just putting that car, you know, maybe that car is fifth, like, or third best or fourth best, and Lando's just getting the maximum out of it, but we don't know if he's like excelling because his teammate is so bad, but that is just the way Formula One is. So yeah, it's still an A.
Yeah, I think an A, and that's what the fans have gone for as well, with 63% of you going for an A as well. Daniel Ricciardo, it's going to have to be a D. He smashed the car. Well, this is also, I was like, this is why I used to love Nico Rosberg, right? Because he was there defending Danny Ricci, was saying, well, the team shafted him on that one. They were pushing him too far on the setup, and that's why the car made the mistake. I was like, I remember why I supported you, Nico Rosberg. Well done.
He's a Danny Ric fan.
Yeah, secretly a Danny Ric fan. But
oh, it's almost an E for me, but I need to save that for another driver. So maybe it's just a... No, is it 13th? Isn't that bad in a McLaren when his teammate finished sixth? And he's getting an E. I'm sorry, I can't give Danny Ric a free pass anymore. He's getting an E.
It's fine. Okay. Well, most of the people that voted gave him a D.
Yeah.
Also, the next highest ranking was a C. So clearly, the DR fans are. Yep. Still supporting, showing that love. So I guess that would balance out to
a D. No, it is a D.
Oh, yeah, it would.
Yeah, it's a D.
Okay, well, I'll make sure to clip this and send it to Daniel Ricciardo.
I'll send him an Instagram DM.
Yeah, because he follows us on Instagram. That's another thing. Always wanted to message him to be like, chin up, but then I can't do that on a WTF1 account because I'll get sacked. What is your rating for Alonso? King of, I can't say the word, but basically...
S-housing, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, is that what you're going to say? Yeah.
Unbelievable, causing the Alonso train. The memes I saw of that were hilarious. And then he like holds everyone back up just to then set a fastest lap because he put his foot on the floor, or foot to the floor. I thought it was really funny, but I can see it also pissing off a lot of people.
Yeah. An A.
Hey!
Yeah, I think so.
I suppose, yeah, like, I was going to go for a B because I did think that his shenanigans, although they made me laugh and it was quite clever, at the same time, it was a bit muggy. So I might go for a B.
Tell me you support Ocon without telling me you support Ocon.
No, no. But no, just the train that he made and the fact that I was like, oh my goodness, the leaders are soon going to catch up to this train and it's going to cause absolute pandemonium. But yeah, well, the fans gave him majority B as well.
How many Fs did Alonso get?
155.
I was about to say how many of Team LH gave him.
Oh, yeah. Oh, bless him.
I see a lot of people like really surprised in the chat that I've given him an A. He started seventh and finished seventh in a...
He also binned it in quali, but then mind you, we gave Perez an A star for doing the same. So
yeah, exactly.
Hey, hey.
Seventh in an Alpine, like...
Yeah. It's a really good result. Quick all weekend, which is why I'm so annoyed by this next result of Esteban Ocon, who was also running in the points, but got penalised for this prang with Lewis Hamilton. Said some pretty heated stuff for Esteban Ocon, who is normally just like, oh, well, better luck next time kind of vibe. He said on the radio, he was like, this is favoritism, talking about his penalty and then basically raging that they changed the rules because apparently that same clash wouldn't have been a penalty. It would have been a racing incident last year. And he was saying, apparently the GPDA agreed on these changes, but he doesn't remember it. And he was not a happy boy because it got him out of the points. I think he finished P12 in the end. But generally, apart from that penalty, he had a really solid weekend, I think.
Still slower than Alonso, though.
Fuck on bias. It's still slower than Alonso.
And his penalty, maybe a little bit over-aggressive.
I see. Okay, well, that's what the fans have also gone majority for, which is good. Now, Pierre Gasly, absolute wonder man around Monaco, actually making overtakes. I mean, it doesn't take much to be a wonder man around Monaco. All you have to do is overtake one car and you're driver of the day.
Gasly overtook about five.
He did. He did such a brilliant job. So got shafted in quali by his team, just literally missed out on setting his quali lap by, well, it must have been milliseconds, because apparently he crossed the line, which they said, nope, you've lost your chance. But he went still flat out thinking that this could be the lap. And then he had to wait for his team to go, okay, Pierre, we missed it, for him to sort of like back off and be like, oh, great. Because he thought that he'd just made it. But I'm tempted to go for an A.
Yeah, I'm going for an A. 17th to 11th at Monaco and actually being the one that overtaked. I mean, I know it was a bit of a gamble to put on Inters, but he was the one to do it and made it work and handled the risk versus reward well by, like, you know, making moves when he needed to without binning it. So yeah, fair play to Gasly.
Very much. Well done, Pierre. Fans gave him a B, so sorry we're overruling that, guys. And then Yuki Tsunoda, it seemed to just have a love affair with Sandoval and that runoff there. Towards the end of the Grand Prix, it was like, and Tsunoda's off again and again and again. It's like,
every time there was a yellow at turn one, it was Tsunoda.
It's always Tsunoda. Yeah. Another one, thank you, as the meme goes. Where did he finish in the end? Yeah, it's pretty appalling.
Actually, quite interesting is that Gasly started 17th and finished 11th, and Tsunoda started 11th and finished 17th.
Wow, it's like Freaky Friday.
Swapsies. Friday. This is the WTF1 podcast reviews for you, isn't it?
Yeah. That's AlphaTauri's race review. Please make a mock-up of Yuki and Pierre with like the Lindsay Lohan vibe Freaky Friday mashup. I need an edit of that. Thank you.
Yeah. I got to give Tsunoda a D because he made a lot of mistakes.
Yeah. It was very close between a D and a C, but the fans have gone for a C. So
a lot of love for Yuki.
They are. They've got it from you. Sebastian Vettel got the final points position. C, maybe. I don't think it can get much lower than that.
No. I almost want to give him a B because I watched a video where he made about four overtakes show. And anyone that overtakes at Monaco and goes for it gets extra points in my book. So yeah. I'm giving him a B.
Okay, you've convinced me. You've twisted my arm. I'll give him a B as well.
I'm so glad we didn't see them because they were great passes.
Yeah, honestly.
Monaco things.
Just Monaco things. So yes, fans also gave majority B, so that's great. And then Lance Stroll, pretty appalling weekend. I think an E, yeah. Fans have gone for a D.
Oh no, I think a D. Oh, I don't know, because an E. If I've given Ricciardo an E, he's got to get an E as well because he literally like, binned it immediately, didn't he? I mean,
and it's got Annie's in the wall.
It's lights out and away we go. And Latifi's off and Stroll's off. I mean, yeah, the
Canadian
meme
sandwich.
Yeah, it's just
Canada.
Oh, poor Canada.
I know
those drivers. You once had Gilles Villeneuve, and now you've got Stroll and Latifi. anyway,
but at least you have a great Grand Prix circuit, so exactly. You know. You've got to take the wins. But yeah, I think... he also managed to damage the car during... I think it was one of the practice sessions as well. So had a love-hate relationship with
Stroll
those barriers.
Stroll replay, yeah.
Oh my God, yeah, the Stroll replay. I'll go in E. But the fans went majority D. And then talking of everyone's favourite Canadian that drives for Williams, rather than just favourite Canadian straight up, Nicholas Latifi, the walking, talking meme machine.
E as well, I think.
Yeah, I think it's going to have to be an E. Yeah. Majority majority of the fans gave him an F. Ooh.
Yeah, it's close to an F.
See why. I mean, so it was an F, 32%, E, 22%, D, 29%. So not great. 13% gave him an E, and I'm sure there's probably a few A stars in there just for the laughs. Oh,
no, actually, I think do I give him an F? He also cost Science the first win by not getting out of the way.
True.
And I know that's not on. Yeah, he's getting an F. Sorry.
Okay, F. I'll also give an F because, yeah, poor Carlos Sainz. I'm clearly being very easily swayed here. Nearly at the end, Alex Albon had to retire early, didn't see the checkered flag.
So, why did he retire?
I think he had a problem with the car.
What one thing that we did briefly mention earlier, mm-hmm. and someone mentioned it in the chat, and I've seen the video on Reddit, is Albon ignored 18 blue flags behind
him. Why is this not more of a thing?
I know, I can't believe that. Because isn't it three and you get a penalty?
Something like that,
yeah. The stewards were definitely like asleep during that race, weren't they? Everything took forever. I wonder if they lost communication of just... Maybe they didn't even have enough electricity to watch the race and they just didn't know what was going on. And they were just finding out from Twitter or something. Yeah, a bit chaotic. He retired with a front-end problem that the team referred to as unexpected bouncing. D.
I think D is fair. And fans gave majority D as well. Valtteri Bottas posted the best picture during the rain delay that I have ever seen in my life.
Whether
nearly
he did
breaking
it or
not. The internet. Yeah, I think he's been sent it by somebody and he's posted it. I don't think he sat there on Photoshop, like in the back of the garage on his phone.
Well, especially because we saw him, didn't we, in
the
rain delay.
Yeah.
And he wasn't doing anything. But it's still
someone
really
somewhere
funny.
It was really quality tweet.
Quality tweet. I want to... yeah, it was slightly disappointing that I was expecting more from him, but he still finished ninth and bonus points for that meme, so B.
Yeah, I think I'll go for a B as well. And then his teammate, Zhou Guan Yu, he was pretty clumsy, to be honest, around Monaco. I might go for a... Where did he
D.
finish?
I think
end?
A D.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he nearly lost it coming out of the tunnel, didn't he?
Yeah.
And in like loads of other places. And sometimes it was a bit slow to get out of the way. Yeah, I think a D. And the fans have given majority C, but also quite a lot of people gave him a D as well. So it's not too outrageous. Kevin Magnussen retired out of the race without anybody having any idea that he'd done so.
What was the reason? Engine troubles.
I think so, something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, engine troubles. He was ahead of Vettel, so he was on for points.
Yeah.
He was looking good. That's a shame. Did anyone else get confused? I don't know if you got confused that when Mick smashed it into the wall, they cut straight to Magnussen. And I almost hadn't even realized because they didn't ever show Magnussen retiring, that I hadn't quite clocked that Magnussen was out the race. And then
I'd seen on the timing screen.
You could see it on
out.
The timing screen, but it made me question like,
what's
was that Magnussen that crashed and he's walked out? But it was just a weird thing to show Magnussen as soon as Haas had crashed and it was very, very weird. But
yeah, because they showed him like walking to the end of the pit lane to see if they could see over.
Yeah.
That's why but it was still a bit of a weird decision. Why we need an immediate reaction from a driver when another driver's had a horrific crash, I don't know. But
no, it's a high C. Yeah, I guess it's hard to be like, oh, he definitely would have got points because it was a crazy race, but he was up there a bit more. So I think a C.
Yeah, I think a C is fair. And fans have also given majority C. And then finally, Mick Schumacher. Oh, I'm getting all choked up here talking about Mick.
E. F. Right, move on.
Crikey. Fans gave him a majority D because the Mick Schumacher fan club is...
He gets he gets a free pass, doesn't he? And gets up a few grades.
He does, yeah. But there were a few Fs, a few Es. And some C's as well. But there we go. Hopefully that was not as chaotic as it could have been, but it sounded pretty manic. Finally, let's go through our predictions. If you listened to the podcast last week, you'll know Spain was absolutely horrendous. We got no points throughout the
everyone. And today is no different.
And today, exactly, spoiler alert. They might be the same. So Matt's Monaco predictions was that Leclerc breaks the Monaco curse. Unbelievable. And Sainz has another mistake / bad weekend. I'm not going to count his little whoopsie behind Perez as a mistake because he recovered that so beautifully. So no points for Matt.
If literally the opposite of both, I'd say there.
Sainz, I think so.
Yeah, Sainz good weekend and Leclerc's Monaco curse continued, so... Can we give minus points while he's not here?
Yeah, let's do it. I said five or more DNFs, and there were only three, so I don't get that. And Hamilton versus the FIA, which was in reference to the jewellery ban. And then the FIA at the start of the weekend were like, oh, we're going to give you further exemption until the end of June. So to me, that just is basically, we're just going to keep delaying this because we don't want to have to deal with it. So that's pretty pathetic from them. But anyway, I feel like if you're going to enforce the rule or don't do it, like... stop putting it off. Yeah. But anyway, Tommy, what were your Monaco predictions?
Mercedes win. Right. And Ricciardo out in Q1.
No. And he didn't. No.
No, he didn't. Well done.
Well done, Daniel. fans, we had R. Bolton 7. Latifi brings out the safety car after ending his race in the barrier. I want to kind of give a half point, but... no safety car and didn't end his race, but did end up in the barrier. So, you know, hey ho. Quadruca's Vettel podium. Love it, but no. And also Formula One Wimbo, pole sitter wins the race, which didn't happen. And loads of people are like, that was just too obvious to go for that one. But actually just proves that it's not necessarily the case.
Especially when Ferrari are on pole.
So true.
Leclerc, I did mention this stat and a lot of people got annoyed. I do like Leclerc, by the way. People, you know, I was the one defending him. I will have you say, you can watch back old podcasts, and I was the one defending him for all the narrative that he was washed and Sainz was so much better. I do like him, but I did have a bit of banter on Twitter about the fact that he now has the same number of pole positions as
you took Gebby's.
Yeah, as Max, but only four wins. Like it's mad how many poles he's got. It's mad how many. Yeah, I was reading them mainly Italians. But yeah, 14 poles and four wins. Obviously, this one he deserved to get that win, but that's quite the he's phenomenal pole record, but very unlucky this time not to get the win. But it is a mad stat, really. Yeah. Like,
lots of people, Max has been around longer and that kind of stuff. But really, he's only kind of had that proper competitive car around the same kind of time as Leclerc. But anyway, everybody's got their own...
There's reasons for and against everything, isn't there?
Positive things.
Literally everyone's career is different.
Yeah, that's the beauty of motorsport, baby. Yep. Right, Baku. Well done, Baku, is coming up next. Matt has submitted some predictions. We did think we were going to have to make some up, but he's actually done it. So thank you, Matt. He said Perez wins again. So he's all aboard the Perez penny farthing, as we've called it before, or the Checo chariot. That's my favourite one. And then another bad weekend for Mick Schumacher. So we'll have to wait and see how that turns out. I have said two red flags in qualifying because last year we had like four or something crazy. It was a lot. And also I've gone bold. I've said Carlos Sainz gets his first win.
Ooh. Which is gonna nearly went for that, yeah.
Did you?
I did, but instead.
It's going to be pretty crazy.
I've gone for the other Ferrari driver. I've gone for a Leclerc win.
Oh, nice.
And I've gone for no crashes at the Castle section all weekend.
So you know what's going to happen there?
Charles Leclerc's going to go.
So Charles Leclerc's going to be leading. He's going to nearly win the race and he's going to crash at the Castle section. And he's going to avoid both of your predictions in one go.
And then Checo win, lead the championship. And yeah,
boom.
Red Bull will fire Max Verstappen for being washed. And Checo wins the title.
Yeah, there first. We go. Predicting the future. As you can see, we did such a good job with our Monaco predictions. That's definitely going to come true. Right, the fans have also given us some. We've got Ras Mastoff. I apologise if I'm butchering these. One of the Red Bull cars breaks down and DNFs. This is a car fault, not a driver fault. Oh no, it's going to be a deja vu of last year.
WTF1 fans, don't be too specific. You're just costing yourself points here.
True. Just say
don't need to go
DNF for a Red Bull. There we go. Just you, as somebody who has rinsed, rinsed the system in this thing, just be vague. The Panchand says Daniel finally outperforms Norris. I love that prediction. Go on, bit of Danny Rick support. And then Mega versus Primus says a surprising winner. I don't know what that counts as a surprising winner, whether that is Daniel Ricciardo, cheeky little win.
I mean,
hashtag I never left, hashtag redemption,
hashtag FEA.
Yep. Damn straight. That was on his helmet this weekend. If you know, you know.
Oh, God. I did see a tweet there that was like Daniel Ricciardo putting FEA on his helmet and then finishing 14th. It's like, was he 14th? 13th? Sorry, 13th.
Yeah, unbelievable. How dare you give Danny Rick slander on this podcast? But no, it's all good. And so, yeah, a surprising winner for Mega versus Primus. So,
Mick Schumacher.
That really would be the shock of the season.
He's the only one that doesn't crash.
Wow. Okay. Right. Well, you heard it here first. Thank you so much for joining us. Tommy, do you have a final thought that you want to share with the group?
Join us for the Monaco little special podcast on Wednesday. Well, I don't know if this was going to be your final thoughts, but we're also walking.
Do you want to go into that? I'm doing exercise. It's a big deal.
For both of us, I mean, I do not do much exercise. I actually, before we go into what it was, you might know this from the watch along, but yeah, we're doing a sponsored walk, and part of it, you have to log into Strava. And the only thing on my Strava app when I logged in, I hadn't used it since 2014. And the only activity I got was basically that I went on a bike ride and had a puncture. And I went 0.1 of a mile and just wrote in it, went out, had a puncture, went home, played computer games. And that's the only thing I've ever put on Strava. So I will actually be walking probably the furthest I've ever walked to try and get this, raise a lot of money for charity. So.
Exactly. So that's happening on Wednesday, the 1st of June. We'll leave a link to donate in the bio of this podcast, and you can also find it on social. And so, yeah, any money that we raise will be going towards Blood Cancer UK, which is the charity of the Race Media. So that's what WTF1 is part of. And it's a charity very close to our hearts, as one of our colleagues has blood cancer. So, it's a very special charity, and why Tommy and I will be up at the crack of dawn walking more than we've ever done in our whole lives. So we might also try and do some Instagram lives or something similar, just to keep you updated with our progress throughout the day. So also make sure you're following us on social if you want to see that. And yeah, any kind of money that you have that you can part with as a form of a donation would be hugely appreciated. And we'll record maybe a podcast a few days after that, and we'll probably still be in like an ice bath or something recording a podcast.
Like that Marcus Ericsson Drive to Survive thing.
Oh, yeah. Then they like the fill Marcus up wheelie Ericsson bins now.
Marcus Ericsson podcast. Yeah. Started with talk of Marcus Ericsson and ended with.
Oh, that's a nice little
funniest. Oh, I need to find it. Sorry, I have to find this tweet because it did make me laugh, even though. It is pretty savage where someone replied about the, I don't know if you saw it, you know exactly which one I'm going for, don't you?
Yes.
Yes, it was Pascal Kenny _ Lamna replied to, basically I said, imagine in 2018 when they were both in the F1 midfield saying that Sergio Perez would win Monaco and Marcus Ericsson would win Indy on the same day, madness. And then Pascal replied saying, we all thought one of the 2018 Sauber drivers, obviously referring to Leclerc, would win today. Just nobody thought it would be Marcus Ericsson.
Savage,
but a very funny observation, to be fair.
Very true. Yeah, well done, Marcus. Nice bit of F1 news, I guess, if you can include that.
Pato Award was very close to winning as well.
He was, yeah. And Paul Grosjean crashed out, I think, just over halfway through the race. So I'm sure there are plenty of Ericsson hit us memes floating around on social. But yeah, it was a good old Indy 500 as ever. Right. On that note, talking about Indy 500 at the end of a Monaco podcast, because why not? We'll say our goodbyes. Thank you so much, Tommy, as ever, for joining this podcast, talking all things Monaco. Matt will be back at some point, I'm sure. I am going to be away for the Baku Grand Prix weekend. So I should be back for the race review poddy, but maybe not the pre-build-up stuff. So hope it's a good race. Hope you all enjoy it. And yeah, once again, if you can check out the link for our fundraiser, that would be amazing. And we'll see you for this Monaco Is It Fit for F1 poddy waddy chat in the middle of the week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.